910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. The mayor of New York City indicted. I'm Daria Albinger. Eric Adams, the former police captain turned mayor of New York City, has been indicted by a federal grand jury amid a corruption investigation, according to sources familiar with the matter. It follows weeks of departures from the Adams administration, including the school's chancellor and the police commissioner. Adams is the first sitting mayor of New York City to face criminal charges. Adams has said repeatedly that he's done nothing wrong and has said he would cooperate with any investigation into his administration, insisting that he is still the best person to run the city while it unfolds, as recently as yesterday.
I'm stepping up, not stepping down. I have a city to run.
Earlier today, New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez called on Adams to resign, in her words, for the good of the city. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. An arrest this week in a long unsolved murder investigation in the La Crosse area. Jimmy Cuska reports.
Officials said 60-year-old Michael Pop of Toma is being held on a $1 million bail as the lone suspect in the 1985 death of Terry Dalloway. According to court documents, a DNA sample taken last year from Pop matches a sample that was collected during the 1985 autopsy. Dalloway was a 24-year-old UW La Crosse student who was found dead in Vernon County 4 days after going missing in 1985. I'm Jimmy Cuska.
A recent school shooting in Georgia appears to be inspiring a rash of school threats. The Attorney General's office says more than 130 school threats have been reported in 28 Wisconsin school districts in just 2 weeks. The state runs a Speak Up, Speak Out tip line where anyone can report an anonymous tip about a concerning comment or post. And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
It's time to go for the green or gold with Civic Media's new Text to Win contest. When you go for the green or gold, you could win $100 cash, gold jewelry, and be entered to win our grand prize, 2 indoor club-level seats to see the green and gold in Green Bay. Download the free Civic Media app in the Google Play or App Store and get ready to text in for your chance to win in this statewide contest. Get ready to go for the green or gold with your local Civic Media radio station.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allbald Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about from Chicago here at the Democratic National Convention at the UC, the United Center. What an interesting way to get into an arena. Just a couple blocks away, make your way through security 6 or 7 times, and you are in one of the safest places on earth right now. And look, reality, this is the world we live in. Some huge, huge names here in the center. For me, so far, night one, a couple of highlights. Night one highlight, obviously Sean Fain. Coming out with a little jacket on, underneath the Trump is a scab T-shirt, and quoting the poet, as he said, Nelly, that it's getting hot here as he unveiled the Trump is a scab T-shirt. And for me, Monday night's labor voices, that's what we should be hearing labor leaders talk about. How are we going to make lives better? How are we going to get out there and organize? And how are we going to use the political mechanisms to get things done? Now, look, I've taken a lot of heat over the Sean O'Brien going to the RNC thing. In fact, the fact that he's not here, interesting statement. The news media is saying that he's been ghosted. Look, when you've got 51 other unions, 51 other international presidents who want to come and speak, it gets to be a crowded field. And there was. You had AFSCME's president Lee Saunders there. You had Claude Cummings from CWA. You had Liz Schuler from the AFL-CIO. You had the leader of SEIU. You had a whole bunch of people come and speak. Sean Fain gave a little bit longer speech. And look, hitting on the right tones. These conventions are about one thing and one thing only, getting your person elected, putting on the best display that you can to say, hey, this is why we elect this person. And this is why, as a 35-year union member and Teamster, I think it's a huge mistake. It was a huge mistake for Sean O'Brien to go to the RNC convention. Because understand, all of the attacks on organized labor that have happened in the last 40, 50 years have been at the hands of the RNC. Have been in the hands of the Republicans. And now you say, well, what's wrong with going and speaking in both places? I have no problem speaking with people I disagree with, just not in that forum. These conventions are about getting people elected. It's about presenting the best face. And O'Brien gave them the commercial. At some point, we will see Sean O'Brien in a Trump ad saying, he's a tough SOB, got a backbone. Now, it's interesting, the labor support in this room, and as I've been saying, for me, this convention, this moment, this Democratic Party is the labor party. In past years, I've heard a lot of lip service, a lot of, oh, yeah, we're going to get to that. The Obama years, for instance. I tell this story, my wife's going to lose her mind. I tell this story, I met Barack Obama as a candidate twice. And twice I asked him about the Employee Free Choice Act. And twice he shook my hand, softest hands of any person I've ever met, just saying. But twice he said, we're going to get something better. And we got nothing. And there was no real push, no shoulder put in, no elbow put into greasing the wheels, none of that. And we got nothing. Workers need a hand. And coming out of this pandemic, the reality, people are working longer and harder. People are at their financial ends. The budget's been stretched. The belt's been tightened. The only way forward in this moment is to get comprehensive labor law reform, to have a government that supports the idea of the National Labor Relations Act, and that is to encourage collective bargaining, and a government that's going to work in that direction. Now, I think we're in a very interesting spot where you have Kamala Harris and the Democrats who are all in on labor, all in on the idea of better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities in the workplace. And then Donald Trump, on the other hand, who praised Elon Musk for firing striking workers. That should be it, right? There should be no more conversation on the labor front about that. There shouldn't be. Now, I understand that Republicans for a very long time have been trying to nibble away, and Sean O'Brien was the latest nibble that they've taken. It'll be interesting to see what the Harris campaign does if the Teamsters don't endorse, which I've said for a while is probably going to happen. I don't see an endorsement of Donald Trump, but I do see potentially a non-endorsement, which, again, is a tacit endorsement of Trump. Because understand, there is a labor party in this country, and it is the Democrats right now. And I have never made that full-throated endorsement of the Democrats as the labor party before. That has never happened. But judging from what we see from the Biden administration going forward, from what we're told the Harris administration will do, that to me is a pretty big, it's a bold statement on my part. But ultimately, it's going to come down to workers, labor leaders, the people in these positions of power, to hold them account, to be in their face and get people in the streets. So it's not just about electing Kamala Harris. There are no saviors for working people, just ourselves. There's no silver bullet. There's no single answer. But there are tools to help move in that direction. And if we want to recreate that prosperous working class of the past, if we want to recreate that American dream that says if you work hard, play by the rules, that you actually get ahead, well, in this moment, Donald Trump is not the answer. But I'm going to say I think the Harris-Walls campaign, that ticket is, along with a down ballot of making sure that you have Sherrod Brown and Bob Casey and John Tester, and we hold Maryland and pick up a couple other seats to give Democrats an opportunity to actually govern. And not have this bickering, divided government that says, no, we want the perfect. We got to get stuff done. And this is where the hope, again, I go back to this hope. The hope is that we take this moment, we seize this moment, and we make the right choice. We go and we vote on issues that matter to working people. And look, you know, so far I've seen a lot of push towards, we're going to take on big corporations, we're going to take on the gouging, we're going to take on mass consolidation. There's a lot of stuff that's moving us in a direction of the country that we want, the country that we need, and the country we want to hand off to our children in the future. That to me is one of the more important parts of all this. I think about my kids all the time. And what that's going to mean for them. What kind of a place are we going to leave? Now, one of the other moments that caught my attention that I got to tell you was kind of sad. I saw Joe Biden speak. I love Joe Biden. Love Jelly Bucket Joe. Again, showed up, did what I think he had to do. Talked about his legacy. Laid out his accomplishments in a way that I wish he could have done on that Thursday night debate to keep him in this race. And then handed off the torch with a full-throated endorsement. The Harris campaign's success to this point can be credited to Joe Biden. For me, that's the simple part of this. But he said, you know, America, I've given you my best. And, you know, that grabbed me for a moment, because here's a guy who knows he's at the end of his road. He has spent a lifetime, whether you agree or you disagree with policies of the past or bills or any of that, and I do, you have to respect the fact that this is a guy who gave his all. The story that his daughter told of him taking the Amtrak back to Delaware so that they can open the doors and he can sing her happy birthday. That's a story I'd never heard before. But that's Joe Biden. That's the guy that we have as president. And those are the kind of people I want in positions of power. And the thing is, I can hear Tim Walz' daughter tell the same kind of story. I can imagine that being the same thing. These are those kind of people that I've been saying for years. We need to have folks that look like us, talk like us, feel like us, and suffer like us in those positions to have the empathy and the idea of how to solve real problems. So today on the program, we're going to spend a little time talking with Rick Wilson about some strategy. Mandela Barnes is going to be here to share some thoughts on what's going on in Wisconsin and what he's been up to, and a little bit about the big shindig here in Chicago. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Of course, miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. But, you know, exciting week, exciting days ahead. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. This is The Rick Smith Show.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com, here from the United Center in Chicago. I have grabbed Rick Wilson, the messaging guru. I can't tell you how many people I've talked to who said, this should be the Democrats' Frank Luntz.
Well,
we're going to see how that goes. But, Rick, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, listen, here's the thing. Frank never accepted his baldness. I did. Listen, I'm delighted to be with you, Rick, as always. And I think that we're in a moment where there's some messaging coming out of Vice President Harris's campaign that speaks to people in this country who've gotten screwed over by big pharma and big banks and big energy companies and big tech. And it's finally like somebody who's not going to go, well, what does lobbyist X or Y want from me today? And I think she's been liberated by the fact it's such a short campaign.
Yep.
She has managed to engage with people in parts of the country that are vital in this race. And a lot of it you're seeing that she's coming out with what I call a positive populism that we've been lacking in this country for a while.
No, I'm absolutely right there with you. But, you know, as I'm sitting here thinking, you know, 20 years ago, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
No.
20 years ago, we'd be on the opposite sides of things. And now what you have is a situation where, you know, quite frankly, you're fighting for democracy.
Yeah, listen, man, I as an ex-Republican, I had to learn some hard lessons about my old party. And one of them was this whole free market idea was bullshit. And I believe in free markets, but what we have with the Republican Party is taking care of, you know, the five or six biggest companies in every sector, no matter who gets screwed. And the idea that people can work hard in this country and get so people can get so badly hurt and screwed economically, it reached the point where it's like the ideology of low taxes are the only thing that matters. It just got broken and hollow. I hope we have a country where men and women can go out and start businesses and compete up and down the chain.
Absolutely.
I hope we have a country where people can work in an industry where they're protected by the protections that come from either government or by negotiating with their free speech and contract rights to have a union in a company. Because what we have right now, this discontent and this anger and this hopelessness that was out there in the country so powerfully for so long, it wasn't just from Trump. It was from a broken ideology in the Republican Party that took people in the middle class and told them, yeah, the big thing we need to do is make sure that Berkshire Hathaway gets another tax break.
No, it's that whole neoliberal agenda that I've been complaining about for 19 years on this program. The idea that we're going to feed the very wealthy and these big corporations at the expense of everyone else. That's always been a problem as someone who is everybody else.
Yeah, and again, you know, Republicans like to say, oh, we're for the free market. No, they're really not.
No.
They are taking care, again, I can tell you, because I came from that world. I remember having a conversation when they were doing the 2017 tax bill. I knew one of the people in Mitch McConnell's office writing that tax bill. I said, come on, man, tell me there's something in here for, like, middle-class tax uplift. And he goes, man, I work for hedge funds. I don't give a shit. And that's what we got. We got a tax bill that gave about 190 people in the country and a bunch of investment bankers and hedge fund bros an enormous gift at the expense of working Americans.
So why hasn't that filtered down to average Americans? I talk to people who go to work every day. I go to work every day with guys who on their tow motors, they're listening to,
yep,
to every right-wing bit of blather.
Yep.
How come that message hasn't filtered to them, that they didn't get anything from Trump's only accomplishment and that it was only for a handful of people?
Because you know what? They live in a culture where they've been told for a long time on Fox and right-wing radio that everything the Republicans are doing is going to save your job from the Mexicans or the black people or whatever scaremonger they want to do that day. And as I like to say, you know, McKinsey has taken more jobs from working class Americans than any Mexican ever has. And they live in a media bubble that has made it very hard for that to get through. And they live in a cultural bubble too, where, I mean, God bless my Democratic friends, but for a long time there was a sort of feeling among those people that, that the Democrats didn't like them, didn't, or held them in contempt, or whatever that vibe was. And I think we're starting to get past that now, because, you know, when I see people at a Harris rally chanting USA, USA over a heckler, I'm like, yes, yes. And you know, the fact that the flags at a Harris rally are American flags and state flags and not flags with Donald Trump's gigantic, you know, hairsprayed, you know, head on them.
His giant melon, yeah.
So, no, I mean, look, I think it's getting through. I think it's going to take a while longer to get through. And again, you know, I keep coming back to this over and over again. There's an economic challenge that faces us right now that is not going to be fixed with a tax cut.
Right.
And it is not going to be fixed with, especially with things like, oh, my God, we've got to lay on the railroad tracks to preserve the carried interest tax deduction for hedge fund guys. Come on. And, you know, I think people have reached the point where they're starting to get it. And I don't think there is another generation in us, you know, because right now the generation of people who are the age of my kids, they're never going to buy a house. You know, the J.D. Vance wonders why people aren't having kids and having families, because they can't afford it.
Right.
Because this country screws them. And I think it's...
No, look, when I came of age, you know, my generation, you know, you could get a job, you know, working in a factory. You could 100%. Get a job working for a trucking company like I did.
Yeah.
And make a good living.
Yeah.
You know, I tell people back, you know, in the late 80s, when I went into the workforce, the job was paying $15 an hour, top rate of $18 an hour.
Sure.
Which in today's money is about $49 an hour.
Sure.
It was a good living.
It's a good job.
That job right now pays $31 an hour, top rate. Where'd that $18 an hour go? And it went to the people that you just laid out. Those have been the important people to the Republicans wholly,
yep,
and to the Democrats partially. So, you know, there's some culpability on both sides.
Hey, no doubt about it. Look, Democrats often go in and say, oh, we're going to do job retraining. And that does not work at the scale we would need it to work in this country. It's a great idea on paper, but it doesn't cure the problems that the McKinsey management's culture and the investment banking owning everything culture has brought to us. Because what they want is cut headcount, cut salaries, maximize shareholder profits.
Redundancy.
Right, redundancy.
We're eliminating redundancy. And what that is are people.
Yeah, people are... The idea that this country has had a great economic run-up in the last 10 years, on the stock market side, it's true, man. The stock market's been killing it. But that does not trickle down to ordinary Americans. And again, people ask why young people aren't happy, why young people are so angry about stuff, and why young people aren't starting families and buying houses and investing in businesses, because they can't. They
right.
literally can't. We broke the system so badly, they cannot catch up.
And I think you made an important point a moment ago, that this isn't new. This has been marching in this direction for a while. The pandemic accelerated a little bit.
Yeah, I think
but
so.
But we were heading here anyway.
Yeah. And I mean, look, I say this still as... And I still consider myself a free market guy. I don't want the government owning every business in the country.
And we agree on that.
I don't think anybody does.
Nope.
But the fact that we decided that the government wasn't going to protect anybody from this inherently destructive economic model that, you know, if you follow the curves out, you eventually end up with one company in every sector, and that's not a free market. That's an oligopoly at the best. And I think that's a really bad outcome. Whether you're a liberal or a conservative, you should not want monopolies and oligopolies, because those things are economically bad and they're morally bad.
No, and it goes against any bit of sanity on any level.
Right, right.
You know, when I've gone through this with people, and they've said, well, if we give the rich people all the money, if we give corporations all the power by deregulating, it'll all benefit us. And I'm going, in what fantasy world?
Show me ever. I've been hearing this for a long time. And again, it was tough coming out of that Republican culture that I used to live in, where the idea of, like, I don't know where and it got so broken that the pinnacle of the idea of free markets was a set of targeted tax cuts for the wealthiest possible corporate and personal interests. That doesn't strike me as conservative anymore. That strikes me as kleptocratic, as corrupt as hell. And the right wing's very great trick has been to convince middle class voters that the harm that's coming to them is from black people or brown people coming from Mexico or South America.
No, they've done a masterful job.
It's a brilliant lie, but it's still a lie.
Well, I mean, it's basic divide and conquer, and they've done a great job scaring where I live, rural America, to death.
Yep.
And, you know, it reminds me of the old Jade Gould quote, I can pay half the working class right. to murder the other half.
Yeah.
This is what we're seeing playing out. So the question I have as a strategist, as someone who is brilliant on social media, is any of this filtering through? I mean, I see Trump basically losing his mind every day with something crazier and crazier.
Yeah.
Has the fever broken?
It is breaking, Rick. It is not broken. There are still going to be some diehard, like, in the Saddam bunker style people that are going to stick with this guy till the end. The Dobbs decision broke a lot of Republican women. It got in their heads finally that these people are not trying to protect the babies. They're trying to,
recreate the 1950s.
Right. Put them back in the kitchen.
Right.
You know, it was always going to happen that way whenever Roe was overturned. But the way it was overturned and all these Republicans in the states, like, oh, yeah, now that that's overturned, we're going to go as far as we can and make it as crazy as we can. And we're going to restrict it as much as we can. That's really hurt them a lot. That has broken through. The economic questions are still the hardest ones because Republicans have a rule that culture is upstream of economics and economics is upstream of politics. So they're able to scare a lot of people. Oh my God, inflation is because of Joe Biden. No, it's because of companies that have decided, and this isn't even like a question anymore. It's because of a bunch of very large companies that have decided to screw over Americans and say, all right, we're going to shrink the size and we're going to increase the cost of everything you buy. And, you know, Harris, to her great credit, Vice President Harris, to her great credit, has been calling that bull.
Yeah, no, as I have from the very beginning as well.
Yeah.
Any sane, rational person would have, other than thinking there's a switch in the Oval Office.
Right.
Where Biden go, nope, over
well, yes, I'll
inflation.
Change the inflation dial today.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, but it's part of the rhetoric.
Yep.
So I'm sure you're a veteran of these conventions. You've been tons of them. So far, what's your assessment of this one?
Very upbeat, very energetic. I think people are really excited by the fact that Vice President Harris has done so well in the first month of her campaign, that she has raised the money she needs to go and fight Donald Trump in the key states. I feel a sense of optimism here that I'm not surprised by it because it's been a good, she's had a good run.
She has.
But there's also a understanding we're going to have 77 days to go and it's going to be a hard fight. We're going to have some rough days and we're going to go out and have to get up in the morning and bring out the baseball bat and go to work on Trump's kneecaps.
So, you know, putting your strategist hat on for a minute,
yeah.
You know, obviously this convention is going to be about sustaining the energy,
sure.
Setting course for the future,
yep.
Being, you know, very, very upbeat. If you're the messaging guru there, which way are you pushing, and then how do you respond to Trump's insanity? Because I don't see any policy coming out of that side.
Oh, no.
I don't see a cogent argument. Anything cogent arguments coming out of him.
I think she needs to keep this speech, and I have some ideas that I think she will. She needs to keep this speech at a very big level. She needs to come across as a big leader, someone you feel like has a vision for the country. She doesn't need to lay out every single line item policy.
Please don't.
But please don't. Please, for the love of God, don't. But she needs to come out there and give them three big things. One, the confidence that she can beat Donald Trump. If you do that effectively in this convention, she's going to come out of this thing with a 3-4 point bump. If they say, that's the warrior, that's the warrior queen who can go kick his ass, that's going to be, that's job one. Job two is to connect to those people we've been talking about, to tell them, you're finally going to have somebody with the drive and the determination to stop the way this country's been doing business that hurts people for too long. And the third point I think she needs to make is that she's going to go back out and defend the rights of Americans and to treat Americans like they are citizens, not subjects, and to treat Americans like they deserve a president who will get up in the morning and really do the work that they need. You know, President Biden had 1 year of his administration, which was just defined by COVID. It was all digging out from underneath COVID.
Yep.
The second year, it was defined by trying to pass these big bills and getting the rug yanked out from them over and over and over again by the Republicans. And the third year has been this. It's been the political nightmare of this country. And now that I think, you know,
I think she's got an opportunity to build off the positive things that happened with Inflation Reduction Act and the infrastructure bill and those things, which never happened under Trump. We never got an infrastructure bill. Remember, infrastructure week was going to happen like
every week,
57 times.
Lots of fun pictures.
Right, right. But it never did. And I think we've gotten to the point where this speech can be big. It can be energetic. It can be emotional. And it needs to tap into something Americans need right now. They need a sense of hope. They need a sense of energy. They need a sense that we are going to get out of the darkness. And I think she can do it.
No, the idea that we can do big things again.
Sure.
We can make lives better.
Yeah.
That's the pitch. Rick Wilson, I appreciate you
taking
time for us.
As always, my friend.
Good stuff as always.
Great to be with you.
I look forward to having you back again real soon. Thanks so much. Going to take a quick break. Right back here from the Democratic National Convention here at the United Center in Chicago. Right back.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, a low in the upper 40s. Patchy fog to start off tomorrow, then sunshine. Highs in the upper 70s to around 80. And temps stay in the upper 70s to around 80 for Friday and the upcoming weekend. Cooler next week. It's 55 right now.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Kamala Harris was so classy. What did you think of the debate? My friend and Milwaukee County Board Chairwoman Marcelia Nicholson.
As a woman of color, she ran a clinic on how to school a mediocre white man. And on the other end, you have Trump, who was angry and rattled and showed why he was unfit to be president.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we wrap up day two here in Chicago, lots of interesting emails, lots of folks responding to some of the things that we've seen here on the program, some of the things we've seen during the convention. And the really great part about it, it's been mostly positive. The hope and joy thing seems to be catching on, seems to be something folks really are interested in. So appreciate the reaching out, appreciate the emails. Way too much to get to, but this idea that it's about making lives better, and this is the focus that we came here thinking they were going to hammer on, because of course it makes sense, right? Ultimately, I think, you know, Rick Wilson, when we talked to him earlier, hit on something that I think I'd like my Republican friends to think about, because Rick's conversion away from, you know, the rhetoric that my generation has been, you know, basically force-fed, is that, you know, conservatism is about tax cuts. Republicans have put all of their eggs in the tax cut basket and pushed, you know, again, as much as we can do to make corporations happy, as much as we can allow them to consolidate, as much as we can allow them to deregulate, and this has created the environment in which we find ourselves. So, as I said about, you know, Joe Biden for the last 2 years, this guy transformationally is moving us away from that kind of model. 40 years of Republican policy, 40 years of bad ideology, and back to what his generation understood, which is if workers have power and corporations have power and you bring them together on an equal plane, they usually come out with a good agreement, and we have a decent society. Now, I do find it interesting, some of the blowback that I've gotten, and it's been mostly from my brother Teamsters, who are angry over my position on President Sean O'Brien, whom I absolutely supported. And the work that they're doing in organizing and bringing people together and fighting for good contracts is fantastic. The sad reality is the distraction was his appearance at the RNC and the whole, you know, thumbs up thing with Trump. I wish we could spend more time on the let's make lives better. And, you know, Monday night you saw working people, a wide array of diverse working people coming together and moving us in a direction that I think is going to be very helpful. Now, you know, in talking with Rick Wilson, I go back to this education, because I want there to be a functional Republican Party. You know, as I was listening to Rick talk about, hey, you need labor unions. You need that balance. You need them to be able to say, hey, we demand a portion of the profits that we make. And when he said, look, and I think one of the most important quotes out of, you know, the working class of this country, especially the red hat folks right now, have been sold on this idea that it's the black and brown communities, it's the others. They're the reason that life hasn't turned out the way it was supposed to. They're the reason our wages are going down. They're the reason that we've been struggling to make ends meet. It's them. And as he said, look, McKinsey is responsible for more job losses than anyone. Because you're pushing this ideology of let's seek the cheapest labor in the most exploitable countries. Bad policy? Yes, absolutely. But a corporatist mentality that, look, quite frankly, as I pointed out to Rick, Democrats were part of as well. I was never a huge Bill Clinton fan. The DLC did not do any favors for working people. This idea that you're going to train your way out of all these job losses is, well, just ludicrous. And I go back to, you know, my experience growing up in Cleveland, watching the deindustrialization, watching the steel mills close, watching the machine shops close, watching those auto factories pare down to where they're just a mere shadow of what they once were. The idea of redundancy and getting rid of people, that to me that's the lesson from what Rick had to say. And the hope is that we listen to that. I would love to have a Republican Party with Rick Wilson at the head of it. Do we agree on everything? No, not even close. And that's a good thing, because I think you do need to have both sides at the table. I don't want the pendulum to swing too far one way or the other. Call me a centrist if you have to, but I know that you can bang out the best agreement if you have to. Our political system has given both sides cover to not get things done for working people. And that's where a lot of this anger is. But I go back to the statement by Rick, you know, that we've allowed a media culture to spring up. The right-wing messaging mastery machine has honed in on this message of it's them. It's the other. Where we used to know. We used to know which side we were on. We used to see the corporate excesses. We used to see the billionaires who, you know, in the case of Elon Musk, fire striking workers. Our history is riddled with rich people hiring working class people to go after other working class people. That divide and conquer, it works. And the hope is that while we're here, some of the messaging gets out. Now, how many Republicans, how many of my red hat friends are watching any of this? Very little. But they should. I watched the RNC convention because I wanted to see what the Republicans were bringing to the table. And there wasn't much. In fact, you know, not a lot of star power there either. The Democrats here have put together a very impressive program. Now remember, as I've said from the start, this is about political theater. This is putting on the best face. This is about getting Kamala Harris and Tim Walz elected. That's what this is about. But it's also about saying, what kind of a vision? What direction do we want as a country? And that comes back to us, doesn't it? What kind of a country do we want? Do we want one where we want to encourage families to have children? Help them with paid medical leave. Help them with childcare. Make sure that the education their children get is second to none. Make sure that they don't have to worry about health security and retirement security down the road. Maybe just a thought. These are things we can and should be doing, without question. In the richest country in the history of humanity, we should not be... we shouldn't be struggling the way working people are. I ran into a good friend while I was here. He sought me out, and we had a lovely conversation. And one of the things he hit, because he moved to the UK, one of the things that he hit me with that I wasn't prepared for was he goes, you know, I love London. I'm never coming back. He goes, you know, I pay 4%, 4.5% tax, and I have health care for my entire life. He's an American living in London. His wife is with him as well. They're about to have children. So 4.5%. That's it. And you go, what do I pay as a portion of my income? What is it that I get? Wait a second. Hold on. Somewhere in the 18 to 25%, about 24% is what we pay for our health care. So when you stop and you think about what could be with smart policy, with sound investment, what could we do? Could we have a social safety net that would encourage families to have children? Because look, the right, J.D. Vance kept talking about, you know, what is it about the women who are childless, something about, I don't know. Not all of us have mother-in-laws who can take a year off to come spend raising our children. Not all of us, like Trump, can hire nannies to take care of our children. Working people have real struggles. And out of this convention, I think we're going to see a lot of that, a lot of the discussions around that. On day one, we saw a lot of discussions around abortion rights and reproductive rights, which rightly so. It is a major issue. And you know, I was just reading the news the other day that said, you know, moderate white women are flocking to Kamala Harris. What kind of a country do we want? And I bring that up time and time again. Because the emails I've gotten, you know, people are like, yeah, we want strong labor rights. Yeah, we want strong voting rights. We want strong protections in the workplace and strong protections for consumers. We want a government that's going to work for us. And I think that's the thing. Because as I had this conversation with this friend, he goes, look, you know, the government helps. That you get things for your tax dollars. You get health care. You get retirement security. You get help raising your children. So that while you're off working, you're not worried that the end is near. So, again, I come back to this moment of, what kind of a country do we want? Where do we go from here? And how do we get to that place? That's the question. If you didn't get a chance to listen to Joe Biden's speech, I highly, highly suggest you do. Well worth the time, well worth the effort. If you missed any of today's program, make sure you download the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you will find ours. And as always, I appreciate you being here. Hope you've enjoyed our coverage thus far of the convention. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. We'll be back in the studio next week. Tomorrow, back here from the United Center here in Chicago. And hopefully we don't get hung up in security again. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick. At rick@therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com, as we're here at the United Center in Chicago for the DNC convention. As you know, as you've been paying attention, hope you've been paying attention, this is where the action is. As I said, what I love about coming to these places, you run into people that, well, you've known in the past, you've had on the program in the past, maybe forgotten about a little bit, and that's why I'm just thrilled to have my next guest, Mandela Barnes. You may remember Mandela ran for Senate back in 2022. We saw him on the tour when we were in Wisconsin in 2022 for the Working Class Heroes Tour. Former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, of course. Happy to take time. Glad I saw you when I first walked into the convention center. If I look like all dazed and confused, it's because I was dazed and confused.
No, that's the great thing. I don't know how we got the spot we got, but
you have prime seating.
It is clean living.
Yeah,
I'm telling you that. But how you been? What have you been up to?
So I've been really good. You know, obviously not doing the thing that I wish I could have been doing right now. The thing that
makes
I
two of us.
Thank you so much. The thing that I worked so hard for, and the thing that so many other people. That's the other part about it. I know what I put into the campaign, but also think about the countless volunteers, the grassroots donors, the folks who showed up for the first time to knock on the door or make a phone call for a candidate. I have such deep appreciation and respect for those folks. So, you know, not doing the thing that I wish, you know, that we wish I could have been doing. However, still been able to stay involved and engaged in a very real way. Two big projects I'm working on. One is Power to the Polls, Wisconsin. We are focusing our efforts on Black, Brown, and working class voters all across the state. And we've had some incredible successes. This past spring, we helped flip the Green Bay City Council for the first time, and I could not tell you when. We were the only outside spender in that race. We certainly were very active in the previous spring election to elect Justice Janet Protasiewicz to the Supreme Court. And we do this by not just showing up during election time, not just 90 days before an election. We have a plan for year-round sustained engagement because folks are tired of being taken advantage of. People are tired of you just showing up to ask for a vote but no follow-up. And in addition to talking about candidates, we talk about issues, and we also talk about things that have been happening or things that have not been happening, and if folks are frustrated and upset, how to properly address those concerns.
Yeah, no, it's about building that community. It's about constant engagement. I keep trying to tell my labor friends this.
Yeah.
You can't ramp up a month or 2 months before an election. You've got to be part of the fabric of the community, part of the fiber of that area to get people in moving in that direction. So that's 100%. Great news.
Yeah, no, and it's very exciting for me to have a return to organizing. But there's also a project. It's called Forward Together Wisconsin. This is an organization that I started from scratch to more successfully implement the Inflation Reduction Act in Wisconsin. And this is where we get to marry environmentalism as well as organized labor. We have a big project with a group called Green Homeowners United. It is a woman-owned union contractor. And with this, we've been able to help weatherize homes all across the city of Milwaukee so far. We're expanding into other areas. And we've been doing this through charitable giving for working class families and low-income families, people who can't necessarily afford the upfront costs for an energy assessment or for insulation work to be done. So we're helping folks who wouldn't typically be a part of the climate conversation, the sustainability conversation, and we are making it very real for them to show how active the Biden-Harris administration has been and how the impacts of that legislation is truly life-changing, if not just cost savings.
Yeah, no, it's a program like that that I would love to see on a national scale, much like during my grandparents' era where they built like little Levitt towns all across this country, so that people coming back from the war could have affordable housing, something kind of we might need a little bit. You know, it'd be great if we could get some affordable housing with some energy independence. Might sound like a future worth having.
And it can't all just be a developer giveaway for low-income housing, right? This has to be truly, truly beneficial for working-class folks, for lower-income folks, and truly beneficial for the whole, not just to line folks' pockets. We see this too often where there are winners and there are losers, and there are a handful of winners far too often. People that make out like bandits, people that basically are able to accumulate a large swath of the benefit for the American people, and the rest is just spread out. And that's why we're in this situation that we're in, where income inequality is at an all-time high, where wages have not kept up with inflation, where people are struggling to find adequate health care options.
Now, you know, obviously you're doing this work with Black and Brown and working class communities. I listened to the orange guy say how wonderful he's doing with all of those groups, and I'm curious your assessment.
Well, my assessment is much like other assessments of things that come out of the former president's mouth, and that is a lot of inaccuracies, a lot of lies, things that just are not true, and it feels as if he's working to convince himself more than the American people, because folks who have lived it, people who have experienced it in real time, know that quality of life wasn't demonstrably better at all under Donald Trump. It has all been fallacy, and we're talking about long-term success of this country and for the lives of working-class people. There has been no better candidate for working-class Americans than, there's been no better president for working-class Americans, at least in my lifetime, than Joe Biden.
No, and hopefully Kamala Harris picks up that mantle and moves it forward. And look, I look at Tim Walz, her choice for VP, and I don't see how they cannot, given the her record and his record. I see great things in the future.
I absolutely see great things in the future. And having been in part of the administration for 4 years, I think that Vice President Kamala Harris is in prime position to carry that banner of fighting for working class Americans. Not just carry it through the campaign, but carry it through 8 years, hopefully, of governing this country.
No, I'm with you. So we're here at this big event. One of the things I've been saying is I've been to past conventions. I don't remember feeling the same kind of energy. And I know that sounds like it's kind of a cliche, but everybody here seems to be, everything's positive, it seems, so far.
Things are positive so far, and things are, still largely positive, even on the outskirts of convention. And, I'm honestly overwhelmed right now. It's a lot going on, and, I think we should appreciate that there's a lot going on, and there's a lot for us to celebrate and be happy for. At the same time, it's not even about ignoring other things, right? Like, I think, as I've said before, and I've said many times, we are a big tent party. There will be protests, right? And that is fine, because if you look at the other party that just squashes dissent immediately, I think about the former vice president, Mike Pence, who had a snowball's chance in hell of becoming the president because he dared go against Donald Trump. That is a party of one person's personality, and it is damaging to this entire country, and people are paying the price as a result. You have people from the village board level to state legislative level to all the way up to Congress and the U.S. Senate who will not stand up and do the right thing in that party because they are, quite frankly, afraid of the retribution of Donald Trump. And that's not the kind of person I want running this country.
No, as I've been saying, I think there has to be a resounding victory for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz in November in order for the Republicans to find themselves. Because, look, I still want there to be two functional parties. I do want there to be, some – I don't want – pendulums to swing too far to one way or another.
Debate is healthy.
Absolutely.
Debate is healthy. You
I want competing ideas.
Exactly.
Problem is the Republicans don't have any ideas, it seems.
Yeah, it's like a battery. We are the positive charge. There's the negative. But you got to have both in order for anything to function.
So, coming out of this, because clearly this is going to be a presentation of the best of this duo, what do you expect to see over the next couple of days? And then coming out of this, what do you hope people take from it?
Well, I'm certain that we'll see a vision for the United States of America. And that's, again, something that we didn't see at the convention in my hometown of Milwaukee. And I hope that people will take away a sense of optimism. I hope that people will leave here rejuvenated. I hope that people will leave here ready to fight like our democracy depends on. I hope that people will leave here fighting like reproductive rights depend on. I hope people will leave here fighting like voting rights and labor rights depend on it, because they most certainly do, and it is important for us to show up and act like it.
Yeah, now, obviously, as an organizer, you're on the ground talking with people every day in Wisconsin, knocking on doors, kissing babies, all that stuff. Maybe not as a candidate, maybe. What's the sense that you're getting from people? I know in my neighborhood, some of the rhetoric is tapped down. I'm not seeing so many of the flags flying. People aren't as obnoxiously wearing the hats. Are you seeing kind of the same thing in your area?
Yeah, so I actually took a bike ride yesterday from over the span of 2 days from La Crosse, Wisconsin to Milwaukee. And you do see some interesting yard signs along the route. I actually did that same ride last year. And while certainly there were a number of Trump signs that were still out there, it's just the way life is, I think it paled in comparison to last year, to the ride last year. I think the intensity was a little bit different than it was on last year's ride.
No, because I'm looking at this, and it's a different feel. Obviously a different feel from 2016 to 2020, but an enormously different feel from 2020 to 2024.
Yeah, certainly a different feel. But again, we can't take a single thing for granted. We've taken things for granted before, and we see how that happens. We have to play, we have to play every round. We have to show up every day as if we're down a point.
Now, last line of questioning I want to get into, because clearly we want Kamala Harris and Tim Walz to win at the top of the ticket. But like you had, in 2022, you needed some help. I think people running in these races, Senate, House, state houses across the country, going to need some help, some down ticket, some coattails. Do you think these two bring that?
I think so. And we have new legislative maps in Wisconsin, too, which gives us an opportunity, a shot to make a larger dent in the state legislative seats, to have a bigger impact on folks' daily lives. And one thing is going to come up all the time, once you get out of a room like this, once you get into the world, people will always ask, can she win? Can she win? Is she going to be able to do it? And I can tell you that I obviously had those same questions. Can he win? Can he raise the money? Well, I broke fundraising records in the state. I came within a point of defeating an incumbent, the closest U.S. Senate race in the state of Wisconsin in over 100 years, the closest challenge to an incumbent last cycle. So, yes, I could have won. And I can tell you this, the people who believed that I could win the most, for sure, not the most, but the people who certainly for sure believe that I can win are Republicans. And that is why they spent unseen amounts of money in third party advertising in this race, in third party spending. It was the largest largest amount of super PAC spending in any Senate race. We were outspent by $26 million in outside spending, and I lost by 1 point.
That is obscene.
$26 million. So, of course, it's certainly possible. And we need to make sure that Republicans are not the only ones that think Kamala Harris can win.
No, and look, those numbers just obscene, which leads me to go, geez, we need campaign finance reform in a bad way, along with so many other things. I know I said last question, but I got to ask you something else. We going to get you back on the trail, because I thought you ran a great campaign. I thought you an incredible spokesperson, very personable on the trail. We saw you a couple of times. It was great. Any future plans?
Well, I really do appreciate that. And I can say that it's not a no. That's all I can say right now. Because, you never know what the future holds.
No. That's what I was looking for.
I'm honored to still be involved. Even at this level, I can tell you that I'm not going away. The answer is more yes than no. But it has to be the right thing, the right opportunity. I don't want to run for something just for the sake of running for it. I need to be able to put as much of my heart and energy into it as I did the last go around.
No, that's the honesty. I don't know. I couldn't possibly. No. Everyone's in.
I'm more yes than no.
There you go. Mandela Barnes, I appreciate you taking time for us.
Hey, thank you so much.
Enjoy the convention.
Hey, you too.
I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break back here in Chicago. Again, I want to hear your thoughts. rick@therickSmithShow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1831. That was the year Nate Turner led a slave rebellion in Southampton, Virginia. From a young age, Turner believed he had a purpose ordained by God. Turner had learned to read from one of his master's sons. He had also learned a deep hatred of slavery from his mother. He came to be regarded as a spiritual leader, or a prophet, by many of the nearby enslaved people. In February of 1831, there was a solar eclipse. Turner took it as a sign that it was time to lead a revolt. He began to make plans. Then, along with seven other enslaved people, he killed the entire family that owned his plantation. The group made their way from plantation to plantation,
killing 51 whites in all. Their plan was to raid the town of Jerusalem. But before they could reach the town, they were met by a militia of 3,000. The small band of between 60 and 75 insurrectionists were no match for the militia. More than 50 slaves were executed. Many more were beaten. Some were from as far away as neighboring North Carolina and had nothing to do with the uprising. White hysteria swept the South. More repressive slave codes were passed in many states. Harsher restrictions were enacted against enslaved people for preaching, being educated, and assembling in large groups. That year, Virginia, Maryland, and Florida all passed laws restricting even freed black men from carrying a gun. Nate Turner escaped the militia into the Dismal Swamp. He stayed there for 6 weeks before he was discovered. He was tried, convicted, and hung. Many historians credit Turner's rebellion and the harsh repression that followed in hastening the coming Civil War and the end of the slave labor system. Labor History in 2 brought to you.
This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.